Well, a great good morning to you. Thanks for coming out on this holiday weekend. So good to have you here. This holiday weekend includes another activity some of you may already know. Tomorrow, we have a Memorial Day retreat planned. Swami Sarvadevanandaji has asked us to join in a tradition of reading from Swami Vivekananda's complete works on Memorial Day. Reading material will be provided. We'll start at 10:30 a.m. When we're finished reading, and we'll be able to tell when we're finished reading because all the marked passages will have been completed, there will be a short worship followed by a potluck lunch. The worship will be basically what we do in the morning, just to acknowledge that it's a worshipful occasion. So that's tomorrow, starting at 10:30, and we'll wind up around 1:30 or 2 o'clock after the lunch, I would imagine. Also, please mark your calendar for a weekend retreat on the 20th and 21st of July. Swami Chandrasekhar Nandaji, head of the Portland, Oregon Vedanta Society, will visit with us on that Saturday and Sunday to offer his wisdom on karma yoga. Would someone be so kind as to get me a glass of water? For some reason, my throat is drying up. A note about the bookshop. Someone has been taking cash from the box. So, to remedy that, cash will be accepted for book purchases only on Sunday and on Tuesday and Wednesday evenings, so that the cash can be immediately collected from the box and not be available for someone to appropriate it. At any other time that you might wish to buy a book, just please bring a check and put the check in the box. So that's an unhappy note to have to make, but there it is. Also, if you will take note that your center will be closed in August, no activities at all except arati, evening arati. And this, thank you, Jyoti, this will be our routine each summer. So closed in August. As those of you who've been coming regularly know, May has been a month for the study of Jnana Yoga, Advaita Vedanta. Today's talk will be the last of those for May. During June, we will focus on Bhakti Yoga, the path of devotion, and then in July, on Karma Yoga. But returning to Jnana Yoga, as a jnana yogi, you practice discrimination, reason, detachment, and satyagraha, insistence on truth. The goal is freedom from all limitation. Our teachers say that our miseries in life are caused by seeing inaccurately. An earnest and persistent jnani may break through this misapprehension, in Sanskrit called maya, and see only the divine presence everywhere, in everything, and in everyone. So, to see that, and to see accurately, what will we see? Swami Vivekananda said, "Come up, O lions, and shake off the delusion that you are sheep. You are souls immortal, spirits free, blessed and eternal. Ye are not matter, ye are not bodies, Matter is your servant, not you the servant of matter. Each of you is only a conduit for the infinite ocean of knowledge and power that lies behind mankind. And aspects of today's talk will deal with what Swamiji said. Regarding this week's talk, the great sage Vasishta lived thousands of years ago. He was spiritual counselor to the court of King Dasharatha, the father of Lord Rama, the hero, the protagonist of the Ramayana. While still a young prince, Rama made a tour of Ayodhya, the kingdom he would inherit. When Rama returns home, depressed and disillusioned by what he's seen, his father worries that the prince is about to renounce the world. Vasishta is called to the court to console and counsel the young prince. He tells Lord Rama, "O my dear child, how strange is this world-bewitching Maya. Being deluded by this Maya, one cannot know the self, though the self has pervaded all through the limbs of the body. As a magic show, or as mirage water in the desert is not true, as a magic show, or as the mirage water in the desert are not true, in the similar manner, this observable universe is not true." To explain what he means by not true, Vasishta says, "This creation, which is merely of the form of a vibration of consciousness alone, this creation, which is merely of the form of a vibration of consciousness alone, is dissolved by accurate knowledge and arises again with false knowledge, just as the false knowledge of the snake arises on the rope." According to Vasishta, this vibration of consciousness is Maya, which he describes as illogical, dreamlike, illusory, and deliberately delusory or deceptive, like a magic show. In other words, it's meant to convince us of something that is not true, that is true. As a magician does something, and because we don't know how in the world that was achieved, it seems to us that he really is able to pull a $5 bill out of the center of an uncut lemon after having taken that $5 bill and written the serial number down earlier. Then, 20 minutes later, a lemon is produced. It's inspected by a member of the audience, and it's uncut. There's no way that there could be anything inside that lemon. And yet, when the magician cuts it open, indeed, that same $5 bill is in that lemon. And by the way, I missed a step. That $5 bill had earlier been burned in a skillet, set afire and burned. This is what Vasishta says we're experiencing. According to Vasishta, this vibration of consciousness is Maya, which he describes as illogical, dreamlike, illusory, and deliberately delusory or deceptive, like a magic show. This morning we will explore the meaning of those verses and what three other master teachers of Advaita Vedanta, Adi Shankaracharya, Swami Vivekananda, and Ramana Maharshi, taught us about how to experience Maya's magic show and still realize the all-pervading, non-dual self, your true original nature. First, let's take a look at what Vasishtha told Rama. This creation is merely of the form of a vibration of consciousness alone. Scientists have determined, proven by the scientific method, that vibration is indeed the essential nature of your physical reality. Here's an explanation by Don Lincoln, PhD. Dr. Lincoln has more than 30 years of experience studying the most fundamental laws of nature. As a senior scientist at Fermilab, America's preeminent particle physics laboratory, he participated in some of the key discoveries of the last few decades, including the discovery of the top quark and the Higgs boson. Now, those names may mean nothing to us, but believe me, they were major discoveries in the field of quantum physics and particle physics. Dr. Lincoln splits his research time between Fermilab and the CERN laboratory in Switzerland. He has co-authored more than 1,000 scientific papers on subjects from microscopic black holes and extra dimensions to the Higgs boson. Now, I gave you that background just to let you know that this man is not a speculator. This man is a scientist. This man has all the credentials to say what you're about to hear. And here's a little of what Don Lincoln knows about what Vasishtha calls our magic show. Quantum mechanics tells us that an electron is both a particle and a wave, and you can never be certain what it will do. Does this sound like a magic show? An electron is both a particle and a wave, and you can never be certain what it will do. Relativity tells us that clocks aren't absolute, distances depend on the observer, and that energy can be converted into matter and back again. These ideas are correct, but they're just the tip of the iceberg. Physicists now use a class of theories called quantum field theories to describe physical reality. Let's talk only about electrons. Everywhere in the universe, there is a field called the electron field. A physical electron isn't the field, but rather a localized vibration in the field. In fact, every electron in the universe is a similar localized vibration of that single field. Imagine how many electrons there are in this room. It's incalculable. Every one of them is simply a vibration in the field that interpenetrates all of what we know. Electrons aren't the only particles to consist of localized vibrations of a field. All particles do. Indeed, there is a field for every known particle, and for all of them, the thing that we visualize as a particle is just a localized vibration of that field. Even the Higgs boson is like this. The Higgs field interacts with particles and gives them their mass, but it is hard to observe this field directly. Now, this Higgs boson, the reason this is so important is none of this would exist if particles don't inherently have mass. It is the interaction with this Higgs field that gives them mass. Therefore, there is what we see. Physical reality depends on it having mass. So it's hard to observe this Higgs field directly. Instead, we supply energy to the field in a particle collision and cause it to vibrate. When we say we've discovered the Higgs boson, you should think we've caused the Higgs field to vibrate and observed the vibrations. Quantum fields are really a mind-bending way of thinking. Everything, this is still Dr. Lincoln talking, Quantum fields are really a mind-bending way of thinking. Everything, and I mean everything, is just a consequence of many infinitely large fields. Now do we get a sense of the divinity of what he's talking about? Infinitely large fields. Everything is just a consequence of many infinitely large fields vibrating. This entire universe is made of fields playing a vast subatomic symphony. Physicists are trying to understand the melody. So Vasishtha was not just offering us a metaphor when he says the observable universe, when he tells Rama the observable universe is nothing more than a vibration of consciousness. These infinitely large quantum fields are the gross form of consciousness. This is what physicists have concluded. Not all of them agree. Not all of them will use the C word. But many of them are saying that reality arises from consciousness, that being arises from consciousness, that consciousness does not arise from being. Yet how do we get from quantum fields to perception of a universe? Here's a science-based explanation of how your body-mind complex performs this astounding feat of cooperation with the great magician. Because that's what happens. We are cooperating. Quite deliberately, according to Sri Krishna. The Atman does this for its own purposes. So here's a science-based explanation of how your body-mind complex performs this outstanding feat of cooperation with the great magician. Why a scientific explanation? We don't have the frame of reference that Vasishtha had or that Adi Shankaracharya had. We don't have that frame of reference. We have a scientific frame of reference. So it's useful to bring what we know, our scientific frame of reference, to these scriptural ideas. So here's the explanation from a scientific point of view. Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared, means energy and matter are exactly the same, manifested in different forms. Quantum physics says energy and therefore matter are vibration only, manifest as quantum fields. An ordinary human being's sensory apparatus, in Sanskrit, antakarana. It means all of your sensory apparatus, not just the receptors, the whole business that exists throughout your entire being. An ordinary human being's sensory apparatus, antakarana, receives and translates these fields of vibration in a very narrow range. The range is, as the scientist said, as Dr. Lincoln said, infinitely large. But we have these ranges in which we interpret vibration as sound, as sight, as touch, taste, and smell. These are our five senses. What we're doing is this machine, this amazing machine, is translating those vibrations into what we experience. Matter is condensed energy. Condensed energy, energy vibrating slowly enough for you to perceive it. Now, I said, I made a distinction about an ordinary human being and their antakarana because you have the capacity, it's described in detail in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, You have the ability, this is what Vivekananda meant by infinite power and knowledge behind. You have the ability to expand your range of perception of vibration, these vibrations, to the point where, at the end of chapter 3, the powers section of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he says, you can become omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. That means you can be one with those vibrating fields. This is still within the realm of duality. This is not an escape from duality. It is still a way of leading yourself astray from realization, but you can expand your ability to perceive and even manipulate those quantum fields. This is what Patanjali asserts and Vivekananda affirms in Vivekananda's book, Raja Yoga. So matter is condensed energy, energy vibrating slowly enough for you to perceive it. You construct, or if you will, project your universe from the forms you have learned to see, hear, feel, taste, and smell, and the names you have memorized for these forms. We create or project what we're seeing because of our ability to remember form and remember the name for the form. Name and form, nama-rupa, this is the universe. And Swami Sarvadevanandaji was asked one time, Swami, what is God? And he said, Brahman with name and form, nothing more. God is Brahman with name and form. So, to return to the scientist, Einstein again, he said, because he had proven it, time is an illusion. And if we look at the Chandi hymns, the hymns to the Divine Mother, it says, O Mother, you have created minutes, moments, and other divisions of time. You have created minutes, moments, and other divisions of time in order to bring about change in things. So it's not a reality. It is part of the Maya magic show. Time is an illusion, Einstein said. And your reality is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. Why is it so persistent? Because of our habit of remembering name and form and being attached to the realm of name and form. So that's some exposition of what sage Vasishtha was talking about when he told Rama that your universe is nothing more than a vibration of consciousness, your observable universe. He was trying to take the sting out of the samsara, out of the world sadness, the world, what Rama had experienced when he toured his kingdom. He saw that human beings suffered from their ignorance. And so Vasishtha was trying to explain to him the nature of that ignorance. Adi Shankaracharya tells us how to break this that Einstein calls an illusion, Maya, the magic show. Shankara tells us how to break this magic show. to see what it is that we're actually experiencing more clearly. As Vivekananda said, "Come up, O lions. You're not sheep. Matter is your servant, not you the servant of matter." Two practices are central to Shankaracharya's teachings. Viveka, an ability to discriminate between the lesser truth and the highest truth, and vairagya, a willingness to release attachments to all aspects and attributes of the lesser truth. Now, how do we start this business of discrimination? We start it by asking ourselves regularly, when your attention is drawn to something, does this deserve my attention? Ultimately, that becomes a higher and higher and higher question, and fewer things deserve your attention. You may have to give the attention because of your duties, and there's a way to divinize that. We'll talk about that next month, that activity next month and in July. But nevertheless, the idea is that you replace lesser truths with higher truths, and higher truths, and higher truths, attempting to come to that which is changeless, that which is eternal, and that which is your true self. So Shankara tells us how to break what Einstein calls an illusion, Maya, the magic show. Two practices are central to this. Viveka, that ability to discriminate between the lesser truth and the highest truth, and vairagya, the willingness to release attachments. When you've identified something as not worthy of your attention, the ability to simply, over time, release it. Maybe all at once. Some people have that strength of mind to release it all at once. But at least over time, having identified it, being willing to say, this really doesn't deserve my attention, I will let it go. And that applies to all aspects and attributes of the lesser truth, the duality. That is the lesser truth. As Vivekananda said, we do not move from error to truth. We move, if you will, from lesser truth to higher truth. It's not an error to perceive this. It's simply an ignorance of what you're truly perceiving. And so we get all involved with attachments and aversions and desires and so on and so forth. When we see more clearly, we are able to release those. Shankara says that with sustained attention and devotion to the ideal, discrimination and release will certainly lead an aspirant forward in spiritual life, and so at last to realization and life as a jivanmukta, one who is liberated while still embodied. And if you wish to read the Adi Shankaracharya's workbook on how this is achieved, it's called the Viveka Chudamani, Viveka, discrimination, Chudamani, crest jewel, the crest jewel of discrimination. We have copies in the bookshop. It's his workbook. Swami Prabhavananda's translation is just like all of his other translations, an attempt to make these very strong and sometimes esoteric ideas available to us in English we can understand. So, Shankara says that with sustained attention and devotion to the ideal, discrimination and release will certainly lead an aspirant forward in spiritual life, and so at last to realization and life as a Jivan Mukta, someone who is liberated while still embodied. So we've talked a little bit about Swami, about Adi Shankaracharya in addition to Vasishta. Now something from Vivekananda. Swami Vivekananda said, "The mind has to be gradually and systematically brought under control. The will has to be strengthened by slow, continuous, and persevering drill. This is no child's play, no fad to be tried one day and discarded the next. It is a life's work. And the end to be attained is well worth all that it can cost us to reach it. Being nothing less than the realization of our absolute oneness with the divine, surely with this end in view, and with the knowledge that we can certainly succeed, no price can be too great to pay." So what is the Swami pointing to? He's pointing to viveka, discrimination, and vairagya, release. That's the price to pay. The price to pay is the release. The viveka is the gradual and systematic bringing of the mind under control so that it doesn't run after that which does not deserve its attention and focuses more and more and more and more thoroughly and more devotedly to the truth. As was said in the introduction, the practice of the Jnana Yogi is satyagraha, insistence on the truth. So the mind has to be gradually and systematically brought under control. Surely, with the end in view of realization, and with the knowledge that we can certainly succeed, no price can be too great to pay. That's from Swamiji's Complete Works, Volume 5. And now, a few words from Ramana Maharshi. Those of you who don't know Ramana Maharshi, he left the body in the early 1950s, I believe. Correct me, somebody who knows more remembers. Say it again.
1950.
All right. He was a great saint, a true realizer of the truth, of Brahman, of the oneness of reality. He had many students, though he never sought students. He had an ashram, though he didn't seek an ashram. It was built up around him. And this is some of what he said. And this is the encouragement. Now we're talking about the end in view. Once the current of awareness of the self is set afoot, it becomes everlasting and continuous by intensification. Once the current of awareness of the self is set afoot, it becomes everlasting and continuous by intensification. It is a good feedback loop. The more you practice it, what he's saying is, the more you practice, the easier it becomes to practice. The more you focus on the truth, the more the truth comes into view. There is no greater mystery than this, that we keep seeking reality, though in fact we are reality. There is no greater mystery than this, that we keep seeking reality, though in fact we are reality. What does he mean by seeking reality? Outward, outward, outward. We keep thinking that we're going to grasp reality, when in fact it is nothing but sand running through our fingers. It arises and passes away. In fact, we are reality. We think that there is something hiding reality, and that this must be destroyed before reality is gained. We hear over and over, the ego must be destroyed. And Ramana Maharshi says, no, no, no. So does Sri Ramakrishna. So for that matter, does Vivekananda. It's not a question of destroying. It's a question of seeing clearly, of purifying your vision, which is done in part by purifying your actions and purifying your thoughts. It's done by practice. As the Swami said, this is no child's play, no fad to be tried one day and discarded the next. It is a life's work. We think that there is something hiding reality and that it must be destroyed before reality is gained. How ridiculous! A day will dawn when you will laugh. A day will dawn when you will laugh at all your past efforts. That which will be the day you laugh is also here and now. So he's saying, if you can see clearly, it can happen here and now. Everyone who speaks about the Advaita path, whether it be the Upanishads, whether it be Adi Shankaracharya, whether it be Sri Krishna, whether it be Sri Ramakrishna, all say it is a very, very difficult path. Swami Yogeshananda, the founder of this center, had a teacher named Swami Yatishwarananda. Yatishwarananda did not stay in the United States. He returned to India, became a vice president of the order, and said a great many things about spiritual practice. I'm going to give the last word to Swami Yogeshananda's teacher, Swami Yatishwarananda. Many people want to practice non-dualistic meditation, very often after reading a few books on Advaita. So many people talk about the Absolute, but what do they attain on the practical side? Most of them give up after a short while. They find they are getting nowhere. In the case of a few others, it may take them several months or even years of futile effort to understand that non-dualism is beyond their grasp. People forget that non-dualism is a state of actual experience. It is not what appeals to you intellectually that is important, but what actually you can do. We should not attempt anything simply by reading books. A dualist with a real spiritual experience is infinitely better than a monist without experience. So long as we meditate, so long as there is meditation and the object of meditation, even in the subtlest form, it is dualism. The reason I say this, the reason I bring this to our attention, is that it is so intellectually appealing to practice Advaita, to think, I am a non-dualist. But as the Swami just pointed out, as long as you are thinking, even in the subtlest way, it is dualism. And it is best for us to freely admit it and purify our dualism. This is what we'll talk about in the next 2 months, the bhakti path and the karma path. How do we purify our dualism so that we don't destroy the ego, as Ramana Maharshi pointed out and Sri Ramakrishna points out? We don't destroy the ego. We purify the ego. Pure ego, pure mind equals pure consciousness, pure intelligence, Sri Ramakrishna said. You go from an unripe ego to a ripe ego. You go from an inexpert dancer to a dancer that cannot put a foot wrong. Then, unless you are one of those people with an iron will and a firm grasp of their mind, then you can attempt. Then you can almost relax into Advaita. So this is why Swami Atishwananda's admonition was brought to our attention. This jnana path may require some preparation on your part. We will all ultimately become monists. This is what Holy Mother said, and I talked about that some few weeks ago. We'll all become monists when our vision is clear enough. In the meantime, as Swami Yatishwananda said, a dualist with a real spiritual experience is infinitely better than a monist without experience. So long as we meditate, so long as there is meditation and the object of meditation, even in the subtlest form, it is dualism. So with that challenging statement, that admonition from this great Swami, what do you have to say? What questions do you have? What comments would you like to make? This is the part where we do this as a congregation. Come, let us go forward together. What has this given rise to in you?
Can you talk a little bit more about this, the quantum, the vibration is the vibration of consciousness is nothing but the quantum fields, that what he said?
In the gross form, yes. There's something subtler underneath this. Stephen Hawking was working with it at the last. What happens when stuff disappears into a black hole? What, only the information remains. But this business of there's something called the double slit experiment that quantum physicists do. And without explaining it all in detail, what it absolutely proves is that your expectation of what's going to happen governs the outcome. The observer's expectation of what is going to happen governs the outcome. In other words, you are part of that quantum field, of those quantum fields. And your expectation governs what happens within those quantum fields in this double slit experiment. There are many other aspects of this that have been explored by quantum physicists. And the conclusion that many of them are reaching is the exact opposite of what science has been. Science has been reductionist. Science has said that consciousness arises from being. And these quantum physicists have agreed now with the rishis and the great spiritual teachers. No, being arises from consciousness. That there is an intentionality about these quantum fields. And that we are part of that intentionality, which is exactly what Krishna says, that Atman is producing this for its own purposes. Atman, 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 Atman. We are doing this. We are not human beings having divine experiences, or even human beings having human experiences. We are the divine being having these experiences. Not many divine beings, though we appear to be the divine being having these experiences. And so, ipso facto, these quantum fields must be a form of consciousness, which is what Vasishtha was pointing to. That the observable universe is nothing more than a vibration of consciousness. That's very close to his very words. The observable universe is nothing more than a vibration of consciousness. If we make the equation between these quantum fields and consciousness, as many of these quantum physicists, including Lincoln, are now doing, he doesn't state it as a scientific fact. He says it as a logical inference. Which is an acceptable form of knowledge, according to Advaita. Logical inference. So the quantum fields and their innumerable interactions, and I do mean innumerable, just as Sankhya points to, ultimately, innumerability. It means numeration, counting, but it points to innumerable interactions among the gunas. Which are, you can see the gunas as fields. It's very easy to make this equation between the tamas field, the rajas field, and the sattva field and their interactions. Good question. Anyone else? Yes, Robert.
Well, you're talking about what I'll call challenges. I don't know what you call them, but that they appear in your life and they keep rising, and you seek solutions and you solve it, and it keeps rising. And pretty soon you're soaring pretty high in your spiritual evolution and your human evolution. And it seems that all of a sudden something will happen. A challenge will be presented to you far below the challenges you've dealt with. And I've noticed that happens consistently. What is that? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. I don't know that Paul Rentz is here today, but I got a book for him. It's called The Doctrine of Karma. You'll find your answer in this book. It's karma. It's unavoidable. It is part of samsara. It is part of our being embodied in these suits. And it has to do with the suits and the suits only. It does not have to do with your essential being, your true original nature. The Atman, Brahman, call it what you will. it's untainted. But good things and bad things happen to this. There are various challenges, good ones, bad ones, to this suit. And the body-mind complex. And sometimes, as you say, you'll be pitched a low ball out of nowhere. And, you know, if you don't jump out of the way, it's going to break your leg. So, the best explanation, the reason I say the best explanation is it was brought to my attention by Swami Swahananda as the best explanation, is in this book. It's a series of lectures that Swami Abhedananda gave at the University of California at Berkeley in the early 20th century. And it explains as best it can possibly be explained why these things happen.
But isn't it like as you keep on doing this spiritual practice, there is a transformation. And with that transformation, you change your attitude, saying, I am not the doer. I am accepting everything, whatever that comes. That relieves you from all those, I thought that is the...
Absolutely. But he asked, why does it happen? The answer to why.
Well, that's why as long as you accept, I am not the doer, there is no question of why comes into it.
If you genuinely embody that attitude, but so often we speak the ideal as if it is our truth. And for us to hold to the ideal, yes, 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 never compromise the ideal, but also don't pretend, now I'm not speaking to you, but one must not pretend.
But on the same token, Yoga Vasishtha, says that this universe is a drama. Act like an actor in this one. This is a magic show. Act like a musician.
No. We're the audience, not the magician. Well, we are both, actually, but...
But as long as this duality is there, you are an actor. I mean, this is what he says, act like that, but always go back into the green room and understand who you are.
Yes. Absolutely, you're right. No question. This is to be assimilated and to be lived. It isn't just an idea to be held in mind. We can hold the idea in mind and work toward it by our actions. That's what we've talked about the next 2 months. We're working toward these things by our actions. But even Vasishtha wept when his sons died.
But that is the duality.
Yes. But he was the great sage. Supposedly beyond all ignorance. And yet, as Rama pointed out to Lakshmana when Lakshmana asked about it, he who has knowledge also has ignorance. So we must not be uncompromising in our judgment, particularly of ourselves, when we fall short of the ideal.
Well,
we must be our own best friends.
But I think that's why we are an actor. So understand, yes, the emotions would come. Yes, you cry and you do everything. But at least, yes, that go back into the green room and understand who you are.
Yes.
So that kind of leeway, all these Vedas gave to us.
Yes. Absolutely, you're right, Krishna. I'm only asking that we not pretend it's true for us before it is true. Because that stops us from making the actions that will make it true. Is when we decide, I got it. Anybody who says, I got it, ain't got it. This is wonderful. Anything else from anyone? Yes, dear.
Out of habit that I must speak at every meeting. I don't want to break the habit that I have to speak at every meeting. So
it's quite all right. It's quite all right. Some of us are built that way. It's good. It's good.
I was reading in the Raja Yoga book.
Yes.
That we can't really, like you said, do away with things, but they have to evolve. So instinct has to evolve into reason, and then reason has to evolve into realization. So we can't be superstitious and think, okay, I'm going to get a download of consciousness and realization. But we have to practice these things.
Yes.
And then, so is that, am I on the right track?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we will receive downloads from time to time when we practice intense concentration and meditation. There will be, something will happen in a moment. And suddenly we will understand, suddenly we will be present to something. But unless we've made that effort to attain that level of depth of concentration and meditation, we won't get that download. As Swami Vivekananda said, the word download is a little deceptive. Actually, it's an upload from the knowledge already present within, according to Vivekananda, and according to the Upanishads as well. But and Sri Krishna and the Gita. So we will have moments of greater clarity. Much greater clarity. And the challenge for us then is to hold on to that. Hold on to that and not let our minds slip back. In the Viveka Chudamani, Shankara says, you'll achieve samadhi and then you'll slip back. You'll achieve samadhi and then you'll slip back. And it goes back and forth and back and forth, but notice it's going upward a little at a time. So, As Vivekananda said, this is not child's play. It's not a fad for a week's work. It's a lifetime of effort. But what is a lifetime? If we buy the premise that we are reincarnated beings, we're eons old. A lifetime is nothing. A lifetime is just a blink of an eye. So we give this lifetime to that, yay! Yay! Yay and amen. No price can be too great to pay, the Vivekananda says, given that we understand the goal that we are to achieve. And so there's all these various ways of thinking about it and talking about it, but it's the doing of it that makes the difference. If we don't do it, we remain stuck in thinking. If we don't assimilate it, if you talk to a doctor, particularly to one who specializes in nutrition and diet, they'll tell you that the body works very hard to assimilate the food that you give it. Works very hard. That's why it's, you know, they used to say don't swim for half an hour after you've eaten. It turns out that that's not quite exactly true, but it really is better if you just kick back after you've eaten and let the body, particularly after a heavy meal, let the body do the work of unpacking that food and assimilating the nutrients, making it a part of you. Same thing is true of these ideas. We'll only get those uploads of clarity and greater understanding if we're spending serious time in contemplation, concentration, meditation, and for those of us who are inclined that way, prayer. Prayer yields a great deal. Thank you, Rita. Anything else? Yes.
Since Dr. Majumdar is not here, I will try to take his place. Making a light note, we always hear this, that it's like an act. It's like a play happening and you act. But at least in play you are given a script.
Yes.
This life is like an improv here. You are given a setting and you just have to. But then you have to use your patience and your vivek.
Yes.
To act on that stage. Sometimes you might have to run out of the stage or something.
Yes.
So that's a more of an improv here.
Very, very well said. Marlon Brando was once praised for being a great actor. He said, "No, no, you're the great actor. Not only that, but you're the scriptwriter and the director. You're the one who deserves the praise." And speaking of someone who deserves something, I asked Naveen if he would sing as an antidote to all of this, Adi Shankaracharya's Bhaja Govindam. So, would you be so kind?
He had his hand up, this gentleman.
Oh, please. I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine.
If there is something, please. Okay. So I asked her. So this is Adi Shankaracharya talking to us about the doing that is necessary beyond just assimilation of the Advaita ideas. He says to the heavy thinkers, he says, that's not going to save you at the end. This is his prescription.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Naveen. And would you tell us, please, the meaning of the refrain of the song?
Yes.
And what the rest of the song is telling us in the light of that refrain.
So, this song actually, the story goes like Shankaracharya was visiting in Varanasi, and at that time he saw one very old man trying to learn Sanskrit grammar. Sanskrit grammar is supposed to be very, very hard. So he, in his old age, he's trying to understand and learn the Sanskrit grammar. So at that time when we look at him, he composed this poem where he's saying that learning this Sanskrit grammar means that just getting the knowledge, gyan, is not enough. You wasting your time in that. Instead of doing that, if you take God's name, remember, that will help you much more than learning the grammar of Sanskrit. So that's the first one. Verse wise, repeatedly I was using the Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam, Govindam, Bhaj Govindam.
Bhaja Govindam means chant the name of the Lord. Chant Govinda's name, which is the name of Krishna.
So say, worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda, O fool. Rules of grammar will not save you at the time of your death. So the second one, O fool, give up your thirst to amass wealth. Devote your mind to thoughts of real. Be content with what comes through action already performed in the past. So it's all what we... I skipped a lot of them. I mostly picked up which is very relevant to the topic over here. So,
well, it's a beautiful evocation of the need for heartfelt devotion to whatever path you're on, and an aid to that is chanting the Lord's name, chanting Sri Krishna's name, because then the promise of Sri Krishna and the other great teachers is, you chant my name, I will come to your aid. Now, you can believe that or not as you wish. That's not, there's nothing required to be, about believing that. But that's what they all say. Every one of the great teachers say, take my name, draw my attention, and I will come to your aid. So,
so then there was Bhagavad Gita, Kinchita Dhita, Ganga, Jal, Bhava, Lokanik Gita. So let a man rear but a little from Bhagavad Gita, drink just a drop of water from Ganges, worship but once Murari. Murari is Lord Krishna. He then will have no altercation with Yama. Yama is death.
Yeah, no difficulties with the god of death. If you do this, these things.
The next was Punarabhi Jananam, Punarabhi Maranam. Born again, death again, again to stay in the mother's womb. It is indeed hard to cross this boundless ocean of samsara. O Murari, redeem me through this mercy.
There's that promise. That that Murari, Krishna, will redeem you through... and as I'm saying, there's no need for the two to take this on blind faith. There's no need for you to make this the center of your spiritual activities. But take it into account. Try it on for size, if you will. See if you don't think that... these great ones who have achieved the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of spiritual achievement, cannot then share something of that with you.
Then there was a artham anartham bhavya nityam nastitaha surlesha satyam sutradapi dhan ajam iti sarvatrasha vidita iti. Wealth is not welfare. Truly there is no joy in it. Reflect thus at all times. A rich man fears even his own son. This is the way of wealth everywhere. And next one is pranayamam pratyaharam nitya nitya viveka vicharam japya samit samadhi vinadhidhanam kuru vadhanam medha vadhanam. Regulate the prana's life forces, remain unaffected by the external influences and discriminate between the real and the fleeting. Chant the holy name of God and silence the turbulent mind. Perform these with care, with extreme care. This is whole Raja Yoga.
Beautiful. Yes. Yeah.
The next one was Guru Charanam Bhajanirbhar Bhaktam Sansara Chirat Bhavamuktam Sendrivanasi Niyama Devam Dakshasi Nirjayadvastam Devam. O devotee of the lotus feet of the Guru, may thou be soon free from samsara. Through the disciplined senses and controlled mind, thou shalt come to experience the indwelling Lord of your heart. That's me.
Which is just another way of casting. It's just another way of putting the Advaita message into words. To know the divine presence in your heart is to know it everywhere. So it's not a contradiction with the Advaita message. Thank you, Naveen, for going to the trouble to prepare that. It was beautiful and so relevant. So before we wind it up, anything else? All right. This is our closing prayer. It's an ancient prayer for peace, as translated by the Swami who founded this place, Swami Yogeshananda. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in
the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in
the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace. Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Om Hari Om Tat Sat. Well, as we know, and I saw her as when we began the comments period, the questions period, I saw Elizabeth Yates, our Jyoti, head for the monastery to prepare the table for us to do put the finishing touches on it. So I think you'll find delicious snacks, and there's tea and coffee. So let's continue our fellowship in the monastery. See you inside.